Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Magnus Teeval. Joining me in the studio here,
Peter R.H.
And we got a bunch of stuff lined up for you today. We're going to start with a couple local community reports. New Westminster is adopting or in the process of adopting a new logo, and not everyone's happy about that. We also have an interview with Burnaby Mayor Mike Hurley. On Gardening with Embark, we're going to talk about pinching, pruning, and looking after your plants to get the most from them. What do you got today to talk about today, Peter?
I brought over from 1989 my Panic Encyclopedia.
The Panic Encyclopedia.
And it was actually the first thing about postmodernism. And actually, it was sort of interesting. 1990s postmodernism was talked about quite a bit. Now, in my opinion, when the terrorist attacks happened, September 11, 2001, it sort of kind of stopped in a way. Didn't hear so much talk. In fact, I think it kind of stopped, actually. In fact, there was even a TV show. I'll have to get my tablet when it started, called Modern Family, which brought back the term modernity. No, that show didn't, but it was a reflection of the fact that during the 1990s, actually in a lot of sectors, people stopped using the term modern. Like it was, modern wasn't modern anymore. And this book, which I have in my bag here, is sort of the forerunner of that happening. And it was also because, remember, in actually kind of late 1991, December 1991, it was the end of the Soviet Union. And that was pretty well unexpected. I don't think there was anybody that predicted it like it did. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be what I'm going to bring up today.
Great. We also have a report on, or an interview about Filipino community organization Gabriela BC. So we'll get to that later in the show. Out in the wider world, a very bit of a crazy weekend. Mm. Although I guess that not really by the standards of recent news, but holy moly, a lot going on. We had protests throughout the United States under the banner No Kings of Americans protesting particularly the ICE raids happening around the country, but also sort of more generally the sort of kind of lawlessness of the Trump administration ignoring court orders and doing things that aren't really strictly legal. So those happen around the states. There was a politically inspired shooting in the states, resulting in two deaths, and the assassination of a lawmaker in Minnesota and her husband. There was the on Friday, Israel launched attacks against Iran, and now Israel and Iran have been basically trading missiles back and forth all weekend, and that continues today. And perhaps, I don't know if the Israelis expected it or not, but a lot of the Iranian missiles have actually been getting through the Israeli defenses and landing in some of Israel's major cities, causing quite a bit of damage from the photos I've seen. Then, of course, there's the G7 this weekend.
And we really don't know, because I think that's an example I find of something to speculate was going to happen, and we would next week be more clear what they choose to tell us about it. Right now, it's kind of speculation.
You're talking about the Israel-Iran situation?
Well, I'm talking about more of what the G7, about Mark Carney meeting with Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's happening this morning.
And it's kind of roping the speculation that next week, I mean, they may not, who knows how much he's going to say about what. One thing I'd like to make clear, I'm clear myself, who struck first in this, Iran or like Israel?
Israel. And it's an interesting situation because Iran was scheduled to meet with U.S. representatives on Sunday to talk about some sort of agreement around the Iranian nuclear program. And on Friday morning, I think it was, you know, Trump was asked about this and whether there was, because obviously some tensions were obviously in the air about this, and the Israelis were not happy with how things were going in those talks. And Trump was asked about whether, you know, he thought the Israelis might attack, and he was saying no, and we were doing these in negotiations, and then the Israelis attacked anyway.
Well, why did they? I mean, I can understand that they're unhappy with this nuclear, but why would they? I mean, that's not a thing to do, it seems to me.
Well, it is a good question. You know, why not wait until, see what the outcome of these talks that were going to happening on Sunday, and see if there's some progress? Because, of course, now those talks didn't happen, and nobody's talking about what's going to happen with the Iranian nuclear program in the sense of towards an agreement, because now that environment is gone for the moment, and they're just trading missiles back and forth.
Well, there seems a bit of paranoia in part of Israel. Maybe I don't know the whole story here, but I don't. Is it evidence that they're? I mean, just because you have the uranium, or you have so and so, doesn't mean you have the bomb, as it were. I mean,
I don't know the details. You know, that's about exactly what was happening with the Iranian nuclear program. I mean, they've done it before. They've stopped it before, you know. And, of course, a lot of this relies on, you know, intelligence information that, you know, we don't necessarily see all the evidence to make our own determination about what's going on. And even if we do, sometimes you can't trust it. You know, you can go all the way back to the, you know, the lead up to the Gulf War, to where, you know, intelligence information as it's released to the public can be, you know, manipulated to try and influence opinion. So I can't, you know, it's hard to say what was happening with that.
I could be proven wrong with further information on my part. It seems that Israel is acting wrongly because it didn't seem like it's a threat as such. I think they're doing it as some excuse, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem, you know, it certainly hasn't, from what I can see, helped the situation, right? They feel they did do damage to, you know, certain nuclear facilities and killed some nuclear scientists, which is going to impact the Iranian program, which, you know, served the Israeli goals, but not necessarily, you know, the broader situation. And, you know, Israel in its initial attack did target, you know, various people in the Iranian leadership, which is also pretty a provocative take. And apparently, from one report I read, was only dissuaded from directly attacking the Israeli leader, not the president, but the spirit, you know, the religious leader, who's where all the real power, Khamenei, was only dissuaded from doing that by the Iranians. And you can only imagine that talking things down from an attack like that, they already killed the leader of the Revolutionary Guards. So they're, you know, they've attacked key people in the regime, which again only makes it harder to dial things back from where they are now. And as you know, right now they're shooting missiles back and forth at each other.
Well, the other thing is that Israel has had the hydrogen bomb for quite a while, and they never officially said, "Oh, we have it."
Yeah.
And it's like everybody would say in a sensible way, they basically do. But it's sort of interesting, they're doing something kind of unofficial for years, for decades, mm-hmm. was that. Oh, by the way, there's only two. There's the atomic bomb and the hydrogen bomb, yeah. which is 1,000 times more than the atomic bomb. The atomic bomb was 1945. The Soviets obtained the atomic bomb 1949. And then the Americans developed the hydrogen bomb in 1952, and the Soviets obtained that yeah. a bit later. So, but there's no sun bomb. Most of the world had the Q bomb. Plan 9 from outer space had the sun bomb. So people just, you only got one bomb, which is big enough for people.
Yeah. So the other big thing that, lots of big things happened on the weekend, as I was saying, was, you know, a political assassination attack on two politicians, but one was fatal, killing the legislator and her husband, and attacking another person, which, you know, speaks to the heightened political environment in the States. I mean, from what it seems like now, this fellow was pretty much acting on his own. But, you know, there's a lot of really hot rhetoric going on in the States right now. And a lot of it, you know, would seem to me to be, you know, on the MAGA side, it's hottest. You know, they really hate the left.
And that
inspires people to act out.
I wanted to say on this, it's a bit surprising. You would have expected it to be a right-wing politician that got some sort of hit. But it's the other way around. I mean, they're the people that get to do what they want now in the United States, and yet I find this assassination of two Democratic. Were they senators or House representatives?
I think they were state senators, maybe.
Okay. I find this a bit odd because was this guy upset about they're not doing enough damage? I don't know. You know what I mean? I mean, it's sort of, it seems a bit odd that this guy was a bit angry at the left wing. Maybe it's time to totally rodeate them. I don't know where he would be thinking.
Well, I guess, you know, you get this sort of heightened rhetoric and this radicalization of people and, you know, the demonization of the opposition. And, you know, I think most people can... I mean, I think it's always dangerous to get the rhetoric to that level. But, you know, not everybody's completely stable, and they take this rhetoric and take it to the next level and think, I'm going to strike a blow for our side, you know. And I don't think it necessarily matters, the fact that, like what you're saying, I mean, I agree, it is sort of strange, that, you know, they somehow think this is necessary when you say they already basically kind of running around doing what they want in defiance of, you know, outside of the laws, in defiance of the courts, and sometimes seemingly, you know, without regard for the Constitution. So, but I think, you know, I don't think it's entirely, you know, it's not like a thoughtful process they're going through. It's like they've a kind of radicalization where they're not thinking clearly, nothing irrationally. And I think there's probably more folks out there. Maybe something like this will cause people to take a step back. But, you know, we've seen, you know, political violence has been happening in the States for a number of years now. You know, they're, you know, going all the way back to the, you know, someone driving their car through a rally back during Trump's first term, you know. That was a BLM rally and drove down a bunch of people. Stuff like that has been happening.
Oh, was that an anti-Trump thing? That was
no. That was a. It was somebody who was. They were kind of like sort of is racially inspired.
Oh, during the first Trump term.
Yeah. The famous incident. There was like a BLM rally, and he drove this fellow just sort of down the street through a protest crowd, just marching. They weren't doing anything. But, you know, there's a lot of rhetoric out there. You know, you see in right-wing circles, You know, they look at some of the protests that were happening last week, and they talk about it as if people on the left are burning down all America's cities. When,
yeah, which they're not for this.
which they're not. You know, I mean, I think anytime you get a big heightened situation, there will be people who come along and take advantage of it. I saw something about looting somewhere. But, you know, cities are not getting burned down, right? You know, as I say, even in L.A., which had the biggest, most high-profile demonstrations and protests, it was contained to about just a few city blocks. It's not the whole town.
Yeah, as I say, his side is winning. And I mean, the person that tried to assassinate Trump, like, you could sort of see, oh, what was his thinking process? Not that it was the right thing to do, but this is sort of even beyond it. I mean, it's sort of like I can say, well, that was a kind of, I wouldn't quite agree with what you're doing, but like this is totally senseless in a sense, the last one.
Yeah, and it you know, what's scary is it can be a thing that hypes up and accelerates if not managed. And so hopefully that's not what happens, but who knows? Anyway, let's get on with our first report about New Westminster Council and their initiative to create a new logo for the city. This is a report from Danny Nesvadarani.
Reporting from New Westminster, BC, this is Danny Nesvadarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. On June 9th, the City of New Westminster unveiled a new logo to be used for the city's corporate branding. This new logo will be replacing the previous design that was first implemented in 2008, which included a crown that was meant to signify the city's historical ties with the British monarchy. The decision to change the logo was first made under the previous municipal government when the city's previous mayor, Jonathan X. Cote, said that the change was needed to move forward with reconciliation and to reflect a more inclusive and welcoming city. This decision was upheld by the current mayor, Patrick Johnstone, and the majority of council after the 2024 election. The finalized logo was revealed during a regularly scheduled city council meeting in New Westminster. And the logo itself is meant to represent a tugboat on top of the Fraser River. Here's what Mayor Patrick Johnstone had to say about this new design.
I remember when I first saw it, I was looking at it and trying to figure it out. And then as you talk through the conversation with the community about the different elements and what they meant and what they represented in the city, it came together for me. And I went from a little bit skeptical to actually seeing that it actually, I think, did tell a good story about our community. So I do appreciate the work that went into that and the subtlety maybe in it that exists in a good logo. So I appreciate the work. I appreciate the result. And I look forward to seeing how it rolls out in the community. Thank you very much.
The logo received approval from the majority of council. However, not all were in favor of the change. City councilors Daniel Fontaine and Paul Minhas, two representatives on council for the New West Progressives, a local political party, voiced several complaints over the redesign. Minhas claimed the change served to erase the city's history, and Fontaine criticized the amount of funding and consultation that went towards this logo change. The differing opinions on the city logo highlights a dynamic on council that has been present since the last election in 2024, the two councillors with the New West Progressives being primarily opposed to the rest of council, the majority of whom belong to another local political party, Community First New West. After the council meeting, we spoke with both Daniel Fontaine and Ruby Campbell, a city councilor with Community First New West, who was in support of the logo replacement. First, Councillor Fontaine.
Sure. So if there is a change of government, meaning that the change of majority on the council, both Councillor Minhas and I have said that we will advocate very strongly to just put a halt on this rebrand and to put a halt on any potential future costing in terms of the rebrand and bring us back to the point where we're back with the existing logo that's there. It really is about 16 months, and it will take a long time, as was noted tonight, to make changes. So by the time we hit the next election, there likely will be on the website and a few banners and things like that. We're probably not going to see a ton of change, and so it offers the opportunity for the next council to reverse course. The whole process that this took 2.5 years, it was initiated by a previous council in the dying days of that regime and that council. This council took that and went with it for 2.5 years. We've undertaken a lot of costs, and as staff have noted, that there are costs, even though they're within our budget, there will be costs for us to have to rebrand and to put, you know, logos on the sides of pens and banners and T-shirts and everything else.
When we next spoke to Councillor Ruby Campbell, we made sure to bring up some of the claims that Daniel Fontaine had made about this new logo change. In her response, she emphasized the level of community input and engagement that took place for this rebranding.
And I really support public engagement, and I also support that the logo came from community voices that were represented by the community. I also think that the city has gone through a lot of changes. This isn't the first logo for the city. It's been around for 17 years. Before that, we had the coat of arms. So this is an evolution the city makes as we listen to the community. Over 650 people contributed to the change and shared their expressed their opinions, and I strongly support the public engagement piece that occurred. Well, you know, sometimes change is hard. People, and it's funny, right? People want change, but they also don't want things to stay the same. And again, when you have community voices sharing their opinions, I think it's important for us to listen.
Once again, those were the perspectives of Councillor Daniel Fontaine, who is against this new logo change for the City of New Westminster, and Councillor Ruby Campbell, who, along with a majority on council, was in favor of this rebranding. This has been Danny Nazvatarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. This segment would not be possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
All right, let's take a quick look at the weather for this week. Bit of a mixed bag. It's going to be sunny with cloud highs up to around 19 for today and tomorrow. The rain's coming in on Wednesday, but no real cooling off. But it's going to clear overnight on Wednesday night and back to sun for Thursday. But then the cloud returns for next weekend, and temperatures are going to cool down to 15 degrees with a mix of cloud and rain forecast for Saturday and clouds on Sunday. So take your opportunities where you can if you want to get out and enjoy some of the sun that's going to be there. Wednesday is your best bet. And otherwise, dress in layers and be ready for probably weather that changes hour to hour. All right, we have another report here from Danny. This is, he talked to Burnaby Mayor Mike Hurley last week.
Anyway, trying to avoid a bit of dead air. That's okay.
Yeah.
Are you under control there, Matt?
We got it under control now. Sorry about that, folks.
When I hear the station, like, it sometimes people may have a trouble getting the station, so I know. Otherwise, you're a pretty professional guy here.
We try to be.
It's just that I don't want, because I do find that when you, CJS can be at times trouble to get, not around our area, but
yeah,
you may be out in Japan somewhere trying to get a show.
All right, here we go. Here's Danny's interview with Mayor Mike Hurley of Burnaby.
Reporting from Burnaby, BC, this is Danny Nazvatarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. At the 2025 Burnaby State of the City Address on May 12th, Mayor Mike Hurley announced the formation of a new Mayor's Task Force on Burnaby Economic Growth and Resilience. According to the mayor during his address, quote, Burnaby's strengths as an economic generator and a home for business are many. Whether it's our central location, our extensive transportation network, our amazing amenities, the list of advantages is long. This task force will help us capitalize and build on those strengths. End quote. While the intent behind the task force has been made clear, CJSF decided to reach out to Mayor Mike Hurley for an interview on the topic, to give him the opportunity to name some of the specifics regarding the task force goals and desired impact on the city of Burnaby.
Well, first of all, I've been looking at our economic strategy for quite a while, and it's frankly been a bit outdated. And so I was considering doing something else, but along with the tariffs and everything else we're now facing, I figured it was a great time to get key leaders in our community together to discuss what we can do. And Burnaby's very successful, but what can we do to be even more successful at this time, and to start to chart a path forward, not just right now, but chart a path forward for where we will be going in the future. So
Mayor Hurley then went on to specify the main focus of the task force.
So the task force will be more related to because we have done a lot of different task force on affordability and homelessness and housing. We've done those task force and we've charted a pretty good path forward on those, but I think this is strictly economic to look at how we can attract more businesses, how we can ensure that the businesses we have are remaining successful and remaining competitive. And, you know, those are kind of some of the key things. But, we need to be very resilient at this time and to be very focused on what we can do and forget about the noise on the outside. It has to be what we can do to be better and to make ourselves more competitive and resilient.
In this response, Mayor Hurley mentions the noise on the outside. We asked him if this noise that he's referring to has anything to do with Canada's current economic relations with the United States.
Well, there's no question that you can't ignore that. That is a fact. But even before this and during COVID and at other times in our history, I think that Canada needs to now learn to stand on its own two feet more and rely less on sending some work that we should be doing here overseas to get it done what we feel is cheaper. But I don't believe it's cheaper in the long run. I think there's a big price that gets paid for that. So I think there's tremendous opportunity here if we look at it, at the resources we have in this country.
So far, Mayor Hurley has explained that the main goal of this task force on Burnaby economic growth and resilience will be to create a list of deliverables to be implemented that will increase business investment within the city. We asked if he was able to answer what type of businesses he had in mind.
Well, you know, Burnaby's a big hub for high tech and for, you know, the biosciences. And so we hope to stay there. It's also a big hub for the movie industry. So we'll be very focused on those because those are the big employers.
Lastly, we asked Mayor Mike Hurley why residents of Burnaby should look forward to this mayoral task force on economic resilience and growth in Burnaby. Why should people care?
Well, I think we should be excited about it because it's the future of our city. You know, it's the future of all our residents that we're dealing with here. If we don't have financial stability, good jobs in our city, that affects everyone. We all know about the affordability issues as is, so we can't let that get worse. We have to start to improve it.
Once again, that was our conversation with Burnaby Mayor Mike Hurley on the upcoming mayoral task force on the city's economic growth and resilience. This has been Danny Nezvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
You can chime in on anything you hear on CJSF by sending us a text to our studio text line. That number is 778-782-2573. That's 778-782-CJSF. And we will get that text right here in the studio, or you can give us a call on the phone. That works as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts about anything you hear on the radio station, including this show. So make use of that number, 782-2573. All right. This is Vancouver Artist Devours and Sports Car Era.